What a year of conflict in Ukraine has shown us about the state of cyber warfare. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino. When Russia invaded Ukraine a year ago today, many security experts braced for what they expected to be an unprecedented escalation in cyber warfare, in addition to the physical military assault. For years before the large-scale invasion, Ukraine was hit by massive cyber attacks that disrupted financial systems, transportation, energy, and politics. Disruptions that were only expected to intensify. But things haven't exactly played out that way, says Adam Myers, chief of intelligence at the cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike.
We've seen a number of destructive, disruptive attacks that have occurred targeting Ukraine that have largely been in concert with kinetic operations and initiatives. So, for example, at one point, the Russians had been actively targeting the media, television and radio inside of Ukraine. And when they were doing that with cruise missiles, they also were conducting wiper attacks against those targets. It's a destructive attack where the goal is to overwrite system data, files, and make them unrecoverable. So they've been largely constraining their cyber operations to more tactical activity. The reason that they didn't conduct widespread disruptive attacks as the campaign was kicking off was because they anticipated needing all that infrastructure to prop up that new government. When the campaign didn't go as expected, I think that they realized that they were actually reliant on some of that infrastructure as well. So they didn't conduct widespread attacks at that point either. Really, the only, what I would say, widespread attack, something that spilled over outside of Ukraine, was the wiper attack that targeted satellite modems that occurred just within about an hour of Vladimir Putin announcing the special operation in Ukraine. And that was meant to disrupt satellite communications and did so effectively, but it also had reportedly impacted systems as far as Germany in bricking these modems for the satellite communications.
So how would you describe how these threats have evolved over the last year in terms of quantity and quality?
They really haven't. You know, we've seen new wiper attacks. So one of the things that you do as a threat actor, when your tools have been exposed, you have to change them so that they're not detected before you get to use them again. So we've observed some evolution. We've seen that they've also kind of moved more towards espionage as well, because as this military conflict has dragged on, the need for intelligence from places like Moldova and Poland and Latvia and Lithuania has increased, right? Because these are countries that are in the region. Some of them, like Poland, are being used to supply military equipment. So they started off with a lot of disruptive attacks, and then they moved into espionage in order to collect information that would be beneficial for military and decision-making.
So if these kind of big audacious attacks on infrastructure have been a smaller part of the picture, what have been some of the targets?
So they've targeted various government entities within Ukraine. Reportedly, they targeted things like border patrol and police stations. They've targeted energy at one point. They conducted a disruptive attack against power in specific regions of Ukraine, using a tool that we track as Indestroyer 2, which we associate with a threat actor we call Voodoo Bear. Once the conflict kicked off, there was also this back and forth. Hacktivism, both pro and anti-Russia, has impacted different targets in the region as well.
And what about for other countries outside of Ukraine that are supporting them in their efforts? Have they been targeted?
We've seen some minimal activity. I don't think that there's been much in terms of disruptive activity. That would likely be escalatory, and I don't think that they're looking to do that. I think we've seen some indications of smaller disruptive attacks that might have spilled over or might have impacted some of these countries, but not a widespread campaign like what we had been concerned about. A lot of us were very, very concerned that, you know, the Russians might try to react to being kicked out of the SWIFT network or respond to sanctions that occurred with disruptive attacks. And that really kind of peaked right after the conflict started, when a lot of Western businesses took it upon themselves to distance themselves or disassociate with their businesses in Russia. And we did see a little bit of indications that they were conducting reconnaissance that would support that type of activity. But it seems that that backed off as they started to focus more in the conflict in Ukraine and reposition what they were doing right around the March-April timeframe.
Overall, how would you characterize the role of cyber attacks in this war over the last year?
In a word, I would say tactical. Initially, we saw destructive attacks that started in January or so, went through February and into middle-late February, and then it kind of dropped off a little bit. We saw some disruptive attacks, some information operations, and then it kind of surged again a little bit later with more wiper attacks as they kind of repositioned and figured out like that they needed to use these things for tactical purposes. So when they went after, as I said, the television stations, that was both kinetic cruise missiles and bombs and things, but also cyber operations. When they were trying to disrupt the border and people leaving through Western Ukraine to go into Poland, as we saw all of the refugees trying to get out, there was some disruption that occurred there with the goal of creating confusion on the ground and trying to increase or enhance the fog of war.
So what have you learned about how to build up resilience to cyber threats from this?
Well, I think the Ukrainians have been living in this experience for many years. I can remember over the years seeing reports of compromises on video screens inside of Kyiv that were trying to scare and intimidate the population with info ops, showing Russian troops and things like that. As the tensions were increasing over the last year and leading up to the conflict, they were working to move government data and systems into the cloud outside of Ukraine so that if they were captured, the Russians couldn't exploit that to their advantage. So, you know, I think that there is a degree of cyber resilience that the Ukrainians have learned and have implemented, and that, you know, has also made some of these disruptive attacks a little bit less effective, right? Because they've been living in that world for so many years.
As this conflict drags on, where do you see all this going from here?
There is this concern about a spring offensive that may bring with it additional cyber capabilities, cyber operations to support that spring offensive. At this point, we have not seen any indications that the Russians will change their targeting vastly and go after Western entities. Right now, I think what we'll expect to see is more tactical operations combined with kinetic operations for the short to midterm.
Adam Myers at CrowdStrike. And now for some related links. We mentioned there were a series of cyber attacks aimed at Ukraine in the weeks leading up to the invasion. We'll link to a CrowdStrike article from January of last year that details the ongoing cyber warfare on Ukraine that they've seen since at least 2014, when Russia annexed Crimea. Those ranged from malware to denial of service attacks. And last year, Kimberly Adams on the show spoke to CrowdStrike's co-founder, Dmitry Alperovich, now the executive chairman of the nonprofit Silverado Policy Accelerator. They talked about the likelihood Russia would launch cyber attacks against the United States, something that Adam Meyer said hasn't really happened to a large extent. But according to a recent article from Wired, several cybersecurity groups tracking wiper attacks, where malware destroys data, these organizations found over the last year, Ukraine suffered the largest number of such attacks recorded anywhere ever. And those can have ripple effects globally. One expert from cybersecurity firm Fortinet told Wired that they've detected other hackers reusing those wiper tools in 25 countries around the world. Jesus Alvarado, Rosie Hughes, and Daniel Shin produce our show. Lydia Morrell is our intern. Becca Weinman is our engineer. Daisy Palacios is the interim senior producer. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.